Thank you for being here, for subscribing to the Dan Time Podcast, a place where you can find me talking with fellow Dans of the world in sports, music, business, and more, as well as some non-Dans from time to time. At Dan Time Pod across the socials, dantimepod@gmail.com. Please rate and review the show if you're enjoying the ride through the Daniverse. I appreciate you as a listener. Hope you enjoyed last week's episode with longtime Birmingham Barons broadcaster Kurt Bloom. A few weeks ago, we had Major League Baseball pitcher Dan Winkler on the show. What a great guy. And today, it is an honor to introduce to you MLB right-handed free agent pitcher Dan Straley. Dan finds himself in unfamiliar territory for the first time in 15-plus years as a professional athlete. As we near the end of April, he is without work on the baseball diamond. But Dan, also referred to as the Red-Bearded Wonder, is committed to finding a suitor, a team that will give him a chance so that he might finish his career in the big leagues. Dan talks about Driveline, the premier data-driven baseball player development organization in the world. Dan realized that what was once working for him as far as pitch execution just wasn't working any longer. He tells a story in our conversation about what led to his connection with Driveline and how he raised his pitch velocity and learned to throw outlier pitches once again. Dan grew up in Eastern Oregon, pitched at Thurston High School, then attended Western Oregon and later walked on at Marshall University. He was drafted in the 24th round by the Oakland Athletics in 2009. Speaking about his career, Dan said, "I'm really proud of it, and I just don't feel like it's over." In the same breath, "I just don't." And finally, Dan talks about what matters most of all, and that's his family. All right, let's get to the conversation now. Folks, it is Dan Straley time. I'm really happy to welcome Dan Straley, free agent, Major League Baseball player. Dan also appears, and let me just say this first. I don't want to get too deep in the episode without mentioning this. You guys, stop what you're doing, pause this show, and download the Journeymen podcast. I've been having a blast listening to those episodes the past week or two. But Dan Straley, how are you doing today, man? Thanks for making time for the podcast.
Absolutely, Dan. Thanks for having me. You know, I've been on quite a few podcasts in my day. Obviously, you mentioned I co-host one myself about the journey of baseball and not told from the eyes of the way the media presents it or the big media presents it in terms of just like the top players, but just kind of everybody surrounding it from the ball players like myself who are fighting for jobs to the guys washing the cleats between games to the guys running the clubhouse. I've had a guy running a team, you name it. We just kind of try to talk about baseball from all different angles. But so I said, I've been on a lot of podcasts. A lot of them, the prerequisite for me is, talking about baseball. We're talking about my job, my career, my stuff like this. This has got to be the first time I've ever been on a podcast that the only prerequisite is that my name is Dan. And I am stoked to be here. When I saw this email come in, I was like, I can't say no to this one. This is just going to be fun.
Yeah, I think this project of mine, when I reach out to people, most people respond. Some people don't. And I just have to wonder, and maybe it's a good thing, the people who don't choose to come on the show or say, hey, thanks, but no thanks. I want people on this show who get the joke. And
yeah, it's awesome.
I haven't really scoured the internet. Maybe there's a Josh time. Maybe there's a Jacqueline time. I don't know. But Dan time is just something I thought would be pretty cool. Celebrating the Dans of the world. The older I get, and I hope you're okay with this too, Dan, I just think that the Dan name it's neighborly. It can be distinguished. It can be kind of goofy if you want it to be.
Yeah,
you can really play around with the name, and so that's what I'm here to do in my little corner of the world here is to celebrate the Dans, as Dan Harrison once said, doing great things in the world.
There we go. I love it. I love the concept. It's good.
But I've been enjoying doing some research on you following the Journeyman podcast, and I know that you're in a chapter of your life here where some people get, you know, they veer off, they lose track of their plan, they start picking up habits, they overeat, they just sleep in, and they do things that are not really conducive to moving forward. But I just love, the more that I listen to these episodes, I wrote some of this stuff down. Like, all I want is a chip and a chair. I love that poker reference. Mm-hmm. And basically, you essentially said that there's two things to do. Move forward. I'm not saying this very eloquently. You can pick it back up there. I think you know where I'm headed with this, but
I think the quote is there's really just two options. You either quit or you don't.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, you keep going or you don't. It's for those of you listening that don't know, this is my 16th year being a professional baseball player, and this is the first time I made it past the month of January without a job. And here we are, one day after tax day in April, and I'm still down here training, working hard, and chasing my dream. And it's become almost just like this mission of, years ago I said I wanted to play in a major league game when my son would remember it. Well, my son's at that age, and all he remembers is me playing overseas in Korea, which was great. I loved playing in Korea, loved the culture, loved the people, loved the games, the stadiums, everything about it was awesome. But, you know, I'm excited that hopefully I get to finish my career over here in the States and just keep going with it. And baseball has blessed me to the point that I can chase this dream, and I don't have to go, worry about paying the mortgage this month. I get a chance to just keep chasing it. And I don't take that for granted. Like you talked about, like falling off the wagon or falling off course there. You know, a lot of people, when you're faced with adversity, it's tough. It is really hard. But I feel that it would be a massive disservice, and to all the people that wish that they could play baseball at age 35, if I didn't take this seriously, it's like basically slapping everybody in the face that wants this or wish they could have had this, that got cut from their high school team, that got told no in college, that got, you know, released after a half a season of baseball. Like it's bigger than me. And it's like, I'd be doing all of them a disservice if I didn't push through and finish this thing. You know, God gave me a gift of throwing a baseball and having the mental fortitude to withstand these pressures. And it'd be slapping in the face if I didn't keep going with this mission that I'm on. Will I succeed? Define success. That's really how I look at it. No matter what, I'm showing my son that you chase your dreams, that you work hard, that you don't quit, that you push through adversity, that you just keep going forward. And don't look over your shoulder and start doing the shoulda, coulda, woulda thing, but just keep going forward. And that doesn't matter that if it's baseball, if I was, I grew up in a family that was all firefighters, and it's like same thing there. Like those guys, like they're trying to climb the ladder and provide for families and doing this. And I watched my dad have good days and bad days and just keep pushing forward. And it's no different. I just happen to do something that is played on TV at 7 o'clock at night, most places. And I just don't take that for granted.
I like what you said there about your son being involved, and anybody that's got kids, young kids especially, by the time they reach, well, I would say by the time that you look across the living room and they lock eyes with you, that's a pretty powerful moment. I remember that happening with my oldest when he was two. But I guess, Dan, doesn't this become kind of bigger than you? It's more of an example that you want to set and to maybe inspire other people, whether it's your son or your network of friends, give them some inspiration to keep pushing hard.
Yeah. It's really tough for me to look my friends and my family or anybody in the face and tell them to just keep pushing through hard times if I don't do it myself. Right. And so I'm on a mission to prove to the world that I still have it, to prove to the baseball world that I still have what it takes to get out at the major league level. And, only time will tell if that's the case or not, if someone gives me my shot, my chip in my chair, as you mentioned. But, there's a lot of sayings like that in baseball. You only need one fan. I only need one member, one decision-making member of a front office to like me, to want me on their team, to bring me on as their insurance policy, whatever you want, however you want to phrase it, however you want to look at it. I just want my chance. And you just keep going. And like I mentioned, with baseball for me, I've worked really hard. I talk about it in my most recent episode of The Journeyman, but I've worked really hard at not putting my identity in baseball. And I think that's gone a long ways for me, especially right now. I'm in this, we call it the hallway season, where I'm in this hallway just walking down it, and I don't know which door is going to be my exit. You know, it's like I pass these doors and I knock on them, I check them, I try to push them open. It's locked. I just keep moving. Well, I've been in that season for about 8 months now, and it's kind of a rough place to be. We've all been there. I don't care what you're doing in life. I don't care what your career is, what you're set. We've all been in this situation where we just don't know what's going on, or like what the next step is, what the next, you know, like opportunity is, whatever it is. It's, and so we're kind of making our way down through this. But not having my identity tied to baseball, but having my identity tied to working on being the best husband and the best father and the best friend, the best business partner, the best whatever it is. I think that's my goal, you know, is to, you know, many, many, many years from now, when I'm taken from this earth, I don't want to be known as Dan the baseball player, but all these other things that are quite frankly much bigger and more important in life. Being an entertainer is great. Like, let's not phrase being a baseball player as anything else, because that's all we are. Is we're entertainers, and it comes down to dollars and cents for that business. It's an entertainment industry. It's one that I'm blessed and proud to be a part of for so long, but that's what it is. And you know, you only get to do those things for so long, especially when you're asking the human body to twist and move and throw and do all this stuff. You can only take it for so long. You can only be the best at it for so long. There's a reason there's not any 50-year-old baseball players out there, right? And so yeah, it is bigger than me. It's a huge part of my life. But it does not define who I am as a person.
Isn't that the truth? One thing I like, Dan, from listening to you with the quad on the Journeyman podcast, you guys are funny. I mean, you guys, folks listening, if you need a new show to carry you on you got a 45-minute commute somewhere, you're going to love it. And you're really going to hang on what Dan's talking about, because he gives you some inside stuff. One of the things I found most fascinating, reaching out to your network. I think some people in life are kind of a little tentative about, hey, I got that guy's phone number, but I don't know if I should call him or if I should call that guy that works for him and ask him to give him that message. And you're not afraid. You know, once an AGM called you or sent you a message or something, hey, I'm adding him to my network. And if I'm trying to seek employment, why don't I just reach out to the general manager? I'm going to take that shot. Speak to that a little bit, just kind of, hey, why not?
Yeah, so there's one thing I've learned in baseball. I was teammates with some very great players over our generation, and one that, you know, comes to mind is like Ichiro Suzuki, right? You say that name and like everybody knows who Ichiro is if you followed 5 minutes of baseball in your life. And when I met Ichiro, yes, he is the biggest name for a long time in the game of baseball, worldwide. Worldwide. And when I met him and got to know him, he's just a man. He is a man that is extremely gifted, extremely dedicated, extremely everything. But we're all just people trying to make our way in life, right? And so when I go into baseball and go into the clubhouse, go into there, it is a group of people that are trying to accomplish one win for that day. We all have different jobs, we all have different things. But at the end of the day, my bosses are guys just trying to do the best at their job, just like us on the field. And so being afraid to text those people now that are in power other places, like, why not? Why not? If I run into Mike Elias at a restaurant, half the people in there might not know who Mike Elias is. Hell, 99, like 95% of the people might not know who Mike Elias is when you're there, maybe 99%. But I know who he is, and he's the general manager of the Orioles. So why would I not text somebody like that when I'm looking for a job? He's a decision maker, and there's only 30 people, 30 employers for my work in the entire world. Think about that. How many jobs have 30 possible employment opportunities? There's 150 major league starters right now. 150 people in the entire world get to do what I'm trying to get back to. And I got to do that for over 5 years at the highest level. And so those people are just normal people. I promise you, they're just normal guys. They have wives, they have kids, they watch Shark Tank, they do all the stuff that normal people do. I just equated everyone, the normal person watches Shark Tank because I do. But my point is that we're all just human beings, right? Just because someone has a fancy job title, or has a lot of decision-making power, I'm going to know their name just as much as I'm going to know the guy who's helping wash my shoes between games, just as much as the guy who's doing my laundry, just as much as the guy who's you know, coaching first base or my pitching coach. Yeah, it's like all these guys are just baseball guys. And so, yeah, I have a handful of GMs' phone numbers. A lot of them are AGMs, assistant general managers, for those of you that don't know. They're the ones dealing with a lot of the roster stuff below the major leagues and things like that, which is what I'm trying to get into, trying to get a AAA job. And those guys were all AGMs. Now they're GMs. Some are still AGMs. I just text them. I text them some videos, some numbers. Hey, you know, hey, so-and-so, it's been 5 years since I said hi, but how's it going? And just, you know, I don't be awkward with it. I just very straightforward. These are very busy people. I do respect their time, but it's just like, hey, it's, I say my name in the text just to make sure if they didn't save my number. And here's videos. Here's a report of what I've been doing. I'm still here. I'm back from Korea. I'm searching for a job in the States. And I got to believe that there's only a couple of people in the world that are built up to 100 pitches that have major league service time under their belt that are willing to go to AAA baseball right now. And so I'm just praying that somebody needs my services, right? And so it's no different than you put your job application in at whatever store you want to work at, and a week goes by and you come back in and just check in, ask to see the manager, introduce yourself so that you can put a face to this piece of paper. And it's no different, except there is no job seeker for us in baseball. That's our agent. That's what he does. So yeah, it's, I'm a big believer in, you know, you can't be told no if you don't ask. And quite honestly, two of the guys that I reached out to flat out were just like, hey Dan, wish you the best of luck, but we're not looking right now. Doesn't mean it could change down the road, but we're not looking right now. My response is, hey, thank you so much for getting back to me. Like, best of luck to you guys this season, and hope the family's good. You know, like, just as simple and move forward. But like, being told no, we've all been told no. I got told no as a freshman in high school. You know what I mean? Like, and then I did this professionally for 16 years. Doesn't mean that my freshman baseball coach was wrong. It just means that I got better at something. So it's just a matter of not being afraid to put yourself out there. And no matter what the, like I said, whatever the career is, we're just happen to be talking about baseball here, but whatever the career is, whatever the idea is, whatever you're looking for, you can't be told no. You'd be surprised how many people of power really appreciate somebody humbly coming to them and just saying, like, hey, these are my goals. This is my ambition. Do you have time to help me learn what it'd be to be in a position like yours? Or, yeah, I mean, just like whatever it is. But like you said, you just, why not? What do I have to lose? Worst case scenario, these guys know I'm close to the end of my career and maybe they'll offer me a job doing something else in baseball. Who knows?
That's one of the things that my dad has always said is, he's like, son, it's all about the network. He's been saying that since I was like 22 years old and was like barely paying attention to what he was trying to impart on me. But he continues to say it. And I'm like, oh, okay, I get it now. What you said really translates to people who are running a business, or maybe they're trying to grow their business. They're in sales and they're trying to just get through doors, get to know people. And like you said, it's you do it a few times or do it over the course of a few years, getting the rejections. I think the word rejection sounds harsher than what it actually feels like. You just kind of,
right,
okay, that's a no, or that's we're not going to be able to pass through there. Moving on. But, you know, you do have a plan in place, and I like that you're in a program that I really want to highlight before we get too far in the episode here. Talk a little bit about Driveline and how that has, you know, helped you in this quest. I know that you had a goal maybe a few years ago of getting your, I guess, your fastball, the floor from 88 up to 91.
Right. No, Driveline's a very, it's the world's best baseball training facility. That's my opinion. I'm sure that they don't disagree with that. But I came to these guys back in 2015. I don't know what happened, but my shoulder just like started hurting, like all the time. Like, I'd go throw a game, and you start baseball games. For those of you who don't know, you as a starting pitcher, you pitch every fifth day. So I'd start a game on a Sunday, and then I'm not pitching again in the game until Friday. And so I would spend Monday through Thursday, or basically Monday through Friday, just trying to get my arm to be not sore by the time Friday rolled around, right? And like, that's a really tough way to be a pitcher, because that's all you need is your body. And so the season ended, and I was talking to my pitching coach in Houston. He's the Arizona pitching coach now, but my pitching coach in Houston. And I was like, hey, there's this like weighted ball program up in Seattle that I've been kind of looking into. And he just like, oh, Driveline. Yeah, I know Kyle Bodie. He's a real good friend of mine. So we end up going to Seattle to play the Mariners. And that day I was out in the bullpen before the game, and the pitching coach, Brent Strom, introduced me to the founder of Driveline. And we just started talking about like what Driveline's all about. And he said some things that really got me excited about it. And one of them is like, I don't even remember exactly the way he put it, but he basically said like, listen, if you're not going to put the work in, we're not going to let you put your name behind this business. Like, we're not going to let people that don't work in our doors. So like, if you kind of half do this, like, we're not going to be working together, like, kind of thing, where it's like, we can't afford, when we're trying to build ball players, a guy that has his name tied to us that's not working. If you work hard and fail, that's baseball. That's life. If you don't work hard and you fail, you just set yourself up for failure, and they don't want to be tied to that. And that was super early on. This is back when these guys were in like a 2,000 square foot space. Now they're in a 40,000 square foot space with two locations, one in the Seattle area, one in Scottsdale, Arizona. And it's just like, it's its own, like, Driveline is like just part of baseball. Any baseball person, you say Driveline, they know exactly what you're talking about. But these guys just have a different approach. It's all about biomechanics and how each individual throws. And it's not like a cookie cutter. There's only one way to do things. It's just trying to figure out how to get the most out of what is God given in each individual that walks through their doors. And it is, it's just a hard, it's a lot of hard work. You train, or you assess, then you train for 6 weeks and you assess again. Train for 6 weeks, assess again, train, and just keep repeating that process. And so, yeah, inevitably you do get better. It just overall, you just get better. And so it's been a really fun journey. It's been really cool to know the guys that own the place for so long and just watch them develop as a business and as people, and to see how they've transitioned from being this kind of small, unknown shop to this multi-million dollar company over the last 10 years or so. And they've been doing it longer. But the whole thing they started is they were just trying to figure out, like, how can they help end this like elbow injury problem in baseball, which is ironic that we're going through it again. So no one solved it. But if anyone ever does figure out how to solve the elbow issue in baseball, then they'll be far richer than most people we know, because they'll be saving the billionaires a lot of money on their athletes' insurance. So there's a whole lot of stuff going on behind the scenes up there, where these guys are just collecting data points, and they're just a Kyle's just a big computer nerd. Like, he'd much rather just be at his desk at 2 a.m. typing, coding, doing research, that kind of stuff. But ultimately, like, he's just really good at what he does here. And so it's just really how to get the most out of each individual. And they just, like I said, they track everything. They develop their own software. They develop their own everything. Everything they have is theirs. Like, I don't think they outsource like anything anymore. They just make everything internally. They got a great group of people working there. And it's kind of cool because it's mostly former ball players. Like, there's a lot of former ball players out there that maybe their career was all the way through college. They got to play that long. And now they're computer programmers and they're working at Driveline, or they played in pro ball and now they're back working at Driveline. It's just a great way for guys to stay in the game that they love so much when their body doesn't allow them to keep playing it on the field. So these guys have been a part of my journey for the last, I mean, the majority of it, right? They've been around my, like, been a part of my career for the majority of it. And it's been a lot of fun to see them progress, myself progress, and they've helped make me a lot of money by helping me, like you said, bring my floor up. It was, for it's not about always just throwing harder at the top side of your velocity. I'll never be a guy that threw 95 miles an hour, but I went from a guy that was kind of averaging like the 88, 89 to a guy that's averaging the 90, 91, and that's a big deal in baseball to be able to throw that little bit harder. And so, it's not just that, it's pitch shapes and pitch quality and just a lot of different stuff that they dive into. But you could go in through a whole long podcast just about what those guys do. But they've been awesome people to work with, and I'm just proud to say that, my name's up on their wall in a couple places, some articles and whatnot that were written early on, just because I was a believer in them before the world really knew who they were.
Yeah, I remember hearing you were there when there was like you and maybe two other guys. There wasn't anybody beating down the door to get in there. And now
Right.
you probably see players from all levels and all age
Oh,
groups.
yeah. Yeah. They have stuff from up in Seattle area. It's called the Driveline Academy. And they have, I want to say, like 10-year-olds up to 35-year-olds like myself in there. and they just it's high school players, junior college players, D1 athletes, minor leaguers, Latin American players, you name it, baseball players there. Japanese guys are flying over, Korean guys are flying over in the winters. Like they're doing it. They got a lot of cool stuff going on, a lot of players coming there. And they're not just, you know, helping guys in the off season, they're helping guys in the season too, which is a really cool aspect of it. And like you said, they have it's called the track ID. And so like everybody's name that comes into their through their doors has a ID number associated with them. And I wanna say those numbers are in like the 100,000 range, or I think maybe that's wrong, maybe it's 10,000 range. But my track ID is like 397 or something like that. And the first like 200 of those were testing numbers. Like they weren't even those were just like them trying to test their systems. And then so the real numbers started around 300. So I was one of the first 100 guys or so inside the doors, which is, you know, just I guess I saw something in them before the world did. But at the end of the day, like I needed them, they needed athletes, and we started just getting to know each other. And they took me on a few trips where they went to different conventions, and I was a ideal player because I trained from home. I trained remotely. And so I would come up and get what I needed to get from them testing wise, and then I'd go home and train. And so it was just a great relationship, and they showed me how to get the most out of my career, which has been, like I said, a blessing, and I will be forever grateful for those guys.
I continue to love the story. The more that I hear about it, it's not just a guy who doesn't want to give up on the game and his career, but it's like, how can I be creative about this?
Right.
What resources can I involve here? And like you said, at the time, it's outside the box. What pitches in particular are you trying to refine your slider, or do you have, are you working on the whole arsenal? And how much repetition is this, like hours and hours each session?
No, it's all about training economy. So you only get so much that your body's willing to put out each day. Mm-hmm. And so that's all calculated, but that's weightlifting, that's running, that's throwing, that's walking around the mall. Like your body can only take so much each day, right? Whatever you're doing, golfing, walking your dog, pushing your kid's stroller, like it's so all that stuff is thrown into their system. And so it is, some days are a lot bigger workloads than others. They do a lot of like train hard, day of recovery, train hard, day of recovery, back and forth. And it's, yeah, everything's measured. Everything's accounted for. There's certain days you go in there and they're like, hey, don't throw this pitch over this speed. And you're like, a fastball, I have to keep it under 80 miles an hour. Like, come on, man. Like, I feel like I'm not even trying, but like, that's the point. Like you're just working on stuff. But no, I went there this last off season and basically just said like, let's get assessed, but let's take a deeper dive away from my mechanics and everything else. And let's take a look at like my pitches, my numbers and my pitches, the metrics, how are they grading out? And we kind of just figured out like, hey, Dan, like the stuff that you did for so long was great, but it's not working. That's what baseball is telling me. So what can we change so that I throw pitches that are outliers again? Outliers means, you know, there's a huge group, the average, right? That's where, and the average is good. We're talking about the best throwers of baseballs in the world, but the average is good. But how can I make my pitches not be average? Because I can't make them above average speed because I throw below the average speed. So how can I make them unique in other ways? So vertical, horizontal movement, all these types of things is what we're kind of searching for. So we just found ways of we designed a pitch arsenal for me, stuff that would play well together, and got to work at finding the grips that allow me to just essentially throw the baseball without thinking about it and letting the ball come out of my hand different ways so that the pitch is moved in different shapes. Like that's the whole point of baseball. If you really want to boil it down, is you're throwing a ball as hard as you can and having it do different things at different speeds, but all you're doing is throwing it as hard as you can each pitch. It's just like a really odd concept, but they have the technology, they have the high-speed cameras, they have all the motion capture stuff that you need to do all that. And so, yeah, it is a lot of sweat, a lot of time spent away. You know, this facility I go to is 5-hour drive away from my house. And so every other week, I'm gone. You know, I'm down in Arizona right now doing some work down here, just getting in the heat, getting ready for going to pitch tomorrow. And it's just like, you know, I'm away from missing my kid's first Little League game today. You know, it's just like, it sucks. But I get to go on Saturday. I've never been. You know, he's 7. I've never seen him play baseball. And he told me the other day, he's like, Dad, this is my turn. You get to watch me now. And so like, I'm actually really excited about that. But Yeah, it's just like you put all this time and all this effort into this craft, and these guys just help make sure that you're not just like throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks, but you're it's calculated. You're not wasting pitches, you're not just wasting energy, you're not wasting effort, you're putting it towards what you need to get better at, because I know what I'm good at, I know what I'm bad at. We put the effort towards maintaining the good and bringing the floor up of what I'm bad at. That's really what it boils down to.
Well, Dan, I want to touch on here just, well, we may bounce around the timeline a little bit, but 2019 is a particularly odd year, difficult year, maybe even some dark times there, the first experience where you've been in the big leagues between when the A's drafted you to the Marlins, the Reds, the Cubs, about a week, I think, with the Padres. I wanted to ask about that. I was going to forget, but this happens sometimes. Players get traded, and then they get designated for assignment almost immediately afterwards, and then they're out of the system. Where did you actually report for them when that happened? And you get the news, I'm going to San Diego. Did you know that Bartolo Colon's coming back, and you're not going to be involved, or are you thinking, hey, I'm...
Well, Bartolo was with the A's. This situation was, we had a catcher, Max Stassi, broke his hamate bone like a week to go in spring training. And they traded me to San Diego for a backup catcher named Eric Kratz. I flew from Florida to Arizona with a couple days left to go in spring training. Pitched for him four innings on the backfield game. And, you know, I didn't go to, I, they asked me if I wanted, or they told me I was not going to the AAA city to go play in an exhibition game, but I was just going to go to San Diego with the other starting pitchers to get ready for the season. We'll see you in a few days. I actually sat next to like the GM's assistant on the flight, like just a random like Southwest flight that I got jumped on to go over there. I ended up sitting with her next to her, and she was talking about the city, talking about places to live and all this kind of stuff. And the next morning I wake up and my buddy had texted me and was like, dude, what the heck? And like, no context, no nothing. And one of the top baseball writers had tweeted out that I was DFA'd. Well, they DFA'd me right after I pitched. And so, but they didn't tell me. And so I flew to San Diego. I worked out the next day, Then I flew to San Diego and woke up and found out I actually only had 3 hours left of DFA limbo. But I'd flown with this assistant sitting next to me, and she was talking about the city and all these places. She filed the paperwork, probably. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Like she's, and I get it that she's not in a position to, but like, you don't need to like tell me about where to live. Like,
you think after
change the subject.
A few minutes pass, you could take a breath and say, hey, listen, Dan, why don't I just tell you?
No, she can't. She can't. I know that. I'm not saying it. No, I have a few of those where people knew what was going on and I didn't. And they just led me on different directions. But anyway, so I got DFA'd and they called me. And, you know, earlier we talked about, you know, being super polite and this and that and being nice to these guys. And this, it's a business, though, right? And I get it. Like, it's not about feelings. Nothing's personal in this business. It's really not. But this one of the AGMs called me and was like, hey, the Padres AGMs called me. And he's like, hey, Dan, unfortunately for us, but good for you. You know, we DFA'd you the other day. And fortunately for us, good for you. You were claimed by the Reds. And I literally was on the phone with him and I was like, wait, what did you just unfortunately for you? You think I care about you trying to take me off the roster and slide me through waivers? Dan, that's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. And I'm like, dude, I don't care about you. Like, you just tried to like change the course of my career because you thought that you could slide me through waivers.
Right.
Just don't. And he was just like, hey, I didn't mean it that way. And he's like, someone from the Reds is going to call you soon. I got to go by. Like, okay, whatever, dude. I didn't save that guy's number, just for the record. No need to talk to him again. But the point is that, yeah, we at any moment in life, I used one of my buddies at the time was working for just like a beverage distributor where we lived in Eugene, Oregon. And he was just like, dude, this is crazy. This is confusing. And I was like, dude, just imagine. He worked for a company called Bigfoot. And I was like, just imagine like Bigfoot calls you today and goes, hey, you know, we sold your contract to Columbia. You're actually going to be slinging Pepsi now instead of Coke or the opposite. And, you know, thanks for everything. Best of luck. See ya. And now when you walk into work tomorrow, you have to drive 3 hours, move your family, and you go to work here instead of there. And I was just like trying to describe it. And they're like, yeah, that's kind of tough. And I'm like, well, it's the industry I'm in. I know it's part of it. So yeah, I was a Padre for 3.5 days. I don't even think I have a jersey. I don't think I have an undershirt. I literally took everything that they gave me and left it in the locker room. Flew across the country, threw the worst bullpen of my life in front of the Reds front office and their pitching coach and the manager. And afterwards, the manager touched me on the back shoulder and goes, "Well, Dan, congratulations, you made the team." And I was just like, wow. Like, God has a plan that I do not understand, and I am here for it. And yeah, it was just kind of crazy. It's just part of our business. The first time I got traded was kind of the same way. You feel like your high school girlfriend dumped you or something. You just like thought you're going to be together forever, and just that's just not the case kind of deal. And it just really, it was a weird time, and you're talking about the 2019 season is what kind of led into all this. And so another uncomfortable situation, I signed an arbitration deal that I was supposed to be paid $5 million, which, coming from a kid that grew up on a Indian reservation in Eastern Oregon in a town of 12,000 people, it's unfathomable. And just spoiler alert, like I didn't get that money. So it is unfathomable. And I signed that contract though, and there's like little tiny clauses throughout all these different things in Major League Baseball. And one of them is an arbitration. If you don't make the opening day roster, you're not entitled to the money. So with a day to go, spring training, the last day, 12 hours before rosters need to be set, they released me. And at least they were man enough to, when I asked them why, they were man enough to say it was to save money. And so I end up going home, trying to figure out what's going on. 15 days later, I sign a major league deal with the Baltimore Orioles. I fly out there. I am pitching 2 weeks. I'm trying really hard to fight for this thing, and I feel good pitching wise, but it's tough. Took 2 weeks off and come in and face the Yankees. Like, it's not an ideal situation. And then things just got worse when I tore my meniscus, and the medical staff just kept telling me that it was just inflammation. I was fine. One of the worst things I heard actually was there was the medical coordinator. I came in and I was like, "Dude, my knee is hurting so bad." And he's like, "Are you sure it's just not because you pitched bad?" And to me, like, it took a lot of stuff within me to not throw some fists in that situation, to be honest with you. That's something you just don't say. And something he probably didn't even know he said. Just one of those people. So we all work with those people. We all
Oh,
know
yeah.
those people. But anyway, so tried to pitch through that. Didn't go so great. Get home at the end of the season. The Phillies were willing to fix my knee. I said, "No thanks. I'll go home and have it done at home." And just had my, it's a simple procedure. 3 weeks later, I was moving around, no problem. Signed a deal to go to Korea and spent parts of 4 years over there. So, I got to spend COVID overseas, which was interesting. But at the end of the day, it's all part of my journey. It's all part of my career. It's all part of who shaped me as a person. It's just all part of my life. And like, I'm here for it. It hasn't been the most straightforward career. It hasn't been the most successful career in terms of on-field success. It hasn't been a lot of things, but it's also been a lot of things, right? It's been a lot of success. It's been a ton of happy moments. It's been a lot of accomplishments. I've done things that 12-year-old me couldn't fathom. 12-year-old me couldn't believe to dream these things. 12-year-old me wouldn't know to even think of these things that were potential. And so, as my career comes to an end, whether it's now or 3 years from now or whatever it is, I've had that perspective the last few years of, you know what, like 12-year-old me would be so freaking proud of who I am and would almost laugh if somebody told me that's what you're gonna do. And it's like I said earlier, dude, I don't take it for granted. I really don't. And I'm really proud of it. And I just don't feel like it's over in the same breath. I just don't. And so that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I could go on for 3 more hours about those types of stories and the ins and outs of this game and all the weird things and conversations and things I've dealt with and different struggles and great moments. And but yeah, just to not make this 3 hours and just give some snippets of it and have some fun with it. Yeah, the 2019 season was the most tumultuous season that I've ever had to face. But I'd also like wouldn't trade it for the world because it taught me a lot how to face adversity and me and my wife to go through hard stuff. And we've always said, whatever the situation is, someday we'll look back at this situation and be like, "Man, can you believe we thought that was hard?" We've all been there. We're like, you're in the moment, you're in the storm, and you're just like, "Oh my gosh, this is the worst thing I've ever been a part of." And then a few years later, something else will happen, and you'll be like, "I can't believe we thought that a couple of years ago was hard. This is hard." And then you get through that, and a couple years later, however the time span is, you're like, I can't believe we thought those two things were hard. This is impossible. And you just keep doing that. And that's called life, right? That's called life. So I can honestly sit here and tell you that being 35 and not having a job on April 16th, while it is a mental grind, it's not the hardest thing I've ever been through. It's not. There's been a lot worse. Is it frustrating? Is it annoying? Is it a challenge? Yes. It's all those things. But like we talked about earlier, it's a simple process. I have two options: give up or don't. And if you haven't caught on throughout the course of this podcast, I'm not giving up. I'm going to keep going. So,
what an inspiration. I like what you said there. You can never reinforce that too much of, wow, we thought that was hard. If you're listening to the show and you're an athlete and you're going through something similar, or you're not an athlete and you just lost your job, or you're going through a breakup, or you made some ridiculous financial decision that just blew up in your face, and you're just feeling like, man, I want to rewind the clock. This is horrible. Just remember, you get a few more years on you. And if you start, if you have one child, you'll realize that some of those things that you stressed out about will kind of fade off. But also, Dan, Max Stassi, I made a note to mention his name because I'm going back to the 2009 Vancouver Canadiens, the Kane County Cougars, I think the Stockton Ports. You guys are moving along, at least these first three stops together. Is that where you guys became friends? And I know you've had some great things to say about Max, just being a good all-around guy. Is that where your friendship formed in the early days of the Oakland system?
Yeah, he just showed up as a high school kid. We were drafted the same year. And there's just certain people that you connect with. And, you know, I'd be lying to you if I said that we still had that strong relationship now. You know, we're just at different places in life. And I texted him actually a few weeks ago. I was walking through Dick's Sporting Goods, and my son knocked over some catcher's gear, and I picked it up, and Max Stassi was on the box. So I sent a picture of it to Max Stassi. It was like an Easton catcher's gear box at Dick's Sporting Goods. And I sent him a picture, and I was like, hey, it's great to see your face, even if it's here at Dick's Sporting Goods in Portland, Oregon. And he responded. He goes, yeah, apparently they couldn't find anybody else to take a photo for him for their advertisement. So, but that's just who Max is, you know, and he's been going through a lot. You know, I had a lot of success on the field, off the field. Got married, had a kid. They had some health stuff with their child they've been working through. And just talk about putting life in perspective right there about the things that truly matter. But you develop some of those relationships that you kind of stick with. Tommy Malone's another one, a guy that I've just always bonded with, always played with. Asher Wojciechowski, another guy. That's a fun story to tell. Again, not enough time for it, but basically Asher beat me out of a job in 2015, got the fifth job in the major leagues, and I got sent to AAA, and him and I became best of friends after that. He got sent down. We ended up being roommates on the road, spent a ton of time together and became real close, lived together at spring training a couple of years, you know, and he works in logistics and for waste management now in South Carolina. You don't know what life's going to bring you, right? You don't know what's coming next, but all we have is our experiences and our relationships, you know, your network. We've talked about that a few times too. And it's not about trying to grow a network to better my family or better my financial status or my job title. It's just about loving on people, because that's what we get to do. That's what we're designed to do as humans, is be in fellowship with each other and love on each other and help each other out. And I could keep going with the list of guys that I've been blessed to call friends and to call teammates, and you know, just different experiences and different stories, you know, throughout this incredible journey I've been on. We don't have enough time for that. But Max Stassi is definitely one that stands out. Just a young kid that showed up, worked hard. You could see it from the word go, how good his tools were. But just, you know, he faced a lot of adversity of himself with injuries and failure, and he just kept going. And he's on pace to be the last member of my draft class still playing baseball. There's me, Max Stassi, and Ian Kroll still playing. I outlasted the first overall pick that year in Steven Strasburg. So I'm proud of that. He's made a lot more money than me, but I'm proud to be playing longer than him. So it's just been an incredible journey and everything else. And like I said, just kind of recap it. Like, the, it's all been great. The on-field success has been great. You know, getting those paychecks for that many years was great, being an athlete and an entertainer. But what it boils down to is, you know, I love my family. I love my friends. And those are the people that I get to live the rest of my life being around and spending time with. And I'll always have everything I've accomplished in this sport connected to me, but it's not who I am. It's just what I do.
Dan, I think that part of why, from my perspective, why I think that you can look back on the body of work and the career and just say, hey, this is pretty cool. This is pretty colorful. Look at all these stops. Look at all these friendships that I made. I was in Fresno in 2015, and you just kind of strike me as someone that's, wherever you are, you're in the moment at that place.
Yeah.
And like what you were saying on an earlier podcast, it may have been the Journeyman about maybe those first couple spring trainings in Oakland, where you're getting to know everybody, the security guards, the people that wash your cleats, or you have this natural curiosity about people, I think.
I do.
Wherever you've been placed, it's like, hey, I want to chat this guy up. I want to get to know this person on a first name basis.
I always tell people, like, I don't necessarily care what you do. Like, I don't. Like, I've had a lot of successful friends that have made a lot of money in their careers and do this. Like, I'm not really interested in what your job title is. I love to hear how you got there, though. I don't care where there is. Like, where you at and where you headed. I just love to hear it. I love to hear people's stories. I love to hear, you know, the grit that got you to the spot that you're in. We've all clawed and fought for anywhere we are, right? We all have a reason for why we are here today. And being where your feet are is a big part of my career. So I tell guys all the time, you know, when you're 12 years old and you're playing in that Little League championship game, like, that's your major leagues. When you're in high school and you're playing in front of your parents and a few friends that showed up, or maybe the girl you like, it's there, like, that's your major leagues. And so when you go to college, that's your major leagues. Each level of the minor leagues, that's your version of the major leagues. So when I got to the major leagues, it was just, I was meant to be there. So I was prepared because I had had that, this is my pinnacle, over and over and over and over again. So I wasn't nervous to be there, because when I was in AAA, that was my major leagues. When I was in AA, that was my major. And it just keeps, wherever you are. So it's just kind of, I've always kind of taken that approach to it, of just being the best version of myself wherever I'm at. And it works. It truly does. If you just commit to where you are, take care of yourself and let the rest take care of itself, was the advice from my pitching coach in college. And it has been the most, to date, like, true statement I've heard about this game of baseball. And it can be applied at so many different places in life. Just take care of yourself and let the rest take care of itself, and you'll like where you end up.
I just continue to hang on these pieces of advice. I hope you guys listening are as well. Something unique about the game of baseball, it's been said many times, it's a game of failure. Even someone hitting 286, pretty reasonable batting average, just one metric there, he's not getting on base but about almost 3 times out of 10. Right. So those are strikeouts, pop-outs, you know, just hard-hit ground balls, great, good contact, getting out, throwing your out pitch, hitting your location, and it sails over the fence or whatever. I'm not saying it in the best terms, but what's it like when you're versus a quarterback that throws a pick six, and as soon as it happens, he's trotting off the field with the offense? Basketball, it's moving really fast. Baseball, you could walk two guys back-to-back, then give up a base-clearing double. You're not getting the hook yet. It's the second inning. Maybe your team started giving you 4 or 5 runs, so you got a little bit of a leash. Then you give up another single. Then you get a pop-out. You're just hanging out there, going through all those emotions. That's a really long-winded question, but what's it like for people listening that haven't been in that situation, where you're on the mound and you are just frustrated, confused? You're thinking, man, I felt great today. What is happening here? But you can't fall apart, because, as we know,
right. The
pitcher's got the center field camera on him. He's got those first and third base dugout cameras zooming in on his expression, how he's handling this moment. Are you guys?
Yeah.
Speak to that a little bit.
Yeah. So when we have a bad day at work, the world notices, right? The audience that's watching you notices. So this is my mom before, I think. But like, mom, you have a bad day at work. Like, you might go home and think about it, but like, your boss isn't going home and thinking about your bad day at work. No one else might even know, not even know it's a bad day at work. We have a bad day at work, the whole world notices. And when I was overseas in Korea, I heard the perfect saying about these days. I'm going to say the saying first, and then I'll tell you the backstory. It's not broke. It just doesn't work. Let me say that again. It's not broken, but it just doesn't work. And what that was referring to was an air conditioning unit in the weight room. It was 98 degrees outside. The air conditioning system had zero airs on it. It was pushing air. It was not cooling the air to the temperature that we wanted it to be inside. It was 94 degrees, it felt like, inside the weight room because there was 30 of us in there lifting weights. They bring all these technicians in. They're searching everything. There's nothing wrong with the system. But today, it is just not working. Today, the air outside is way too hot for our system's capacity to cool it off by the time it gets to your room. When the air outside cools off, that air that passes through the system will be cooled to your desired temperature of whatever, okay? When you're on the mound, you don't get to the major leagues by sucking. You don't get to the major leagues by failing. Anytime you watch an athlete on TV, you're watching someone that has poured their heart and their soul into that profession, okay? Now, because people buy tickets to these sporting events and pay for these TV packages and this and that, like, right? Like, they're entitled to their whatevers. You can say what you want according to them. But I always remind people, like, we're just people, right? We're just like you. And some days I show up to work and the air outside is too hot for my system to cool it off. I'm not broken. I'm not going to go hit the panic button after this game and figure out what I need to change. It just didn't work today. One of my favorite examples of this is Joey Votto. If you follow baseball, you know who Joey Votto is. And I played with Joey in 2016. And at the end of May, so we're pretty far into the season. At the end of May, I think it was, Joey was hitting like 202, which is not Joey Votto. It might have even dipped below 200, but I don't know exactly where. It was around 200. And Joey said to the media, if I finish this season under 200, I will retire and give back the rest of my contract. I think Joey was serious, by the way. And so I was really paying attention to Joey at this point. How does a superstar deal with failure? How does a superstar get out of this hole that he's in? And what I noticed was that Joey Votto changed nothing. Joey Votto showed up every single day and did his work diligently, the same way, the same effort, day in, day out, never failing, never faltering, never distracted, never woe is me, showed up and worked. The season ended. Joey finished second or third in the American League MVP voting and hit over 400 in the second half of the season and finished batting 325 on the year. He did the same routine, the same drill, the same everything, the same warm-up. This, you name it, it was the same when he was hitting 200 versus when he hit over 400 in the second half of the season. What Joey was doing in the first half, the first part of the season, was not broken. It just didn't work. But he believed in his process. He believed in the outcome. There's a huge difference in baseball in being like result-driven versus process-driven. A result-driven person is going to be higher than high when they're doing great and lower than low when they're doing bad. And that is a tough place to be as a professional athlete because it is so full of failures and success that being a process-motivated, a process-driven person and just trusting, laying down your process, knowing it is a good process and trusting your process to just show up and put the work in is all you can ask of yourself. And you'll sleep great at the end of the day knowing that I gave it everything I had, and win, lose, or draw, it wasn't because I did something different. I put in the same thing all the time, that consistency we look for in baseball. And so when you see an athlete on the mound struggling, when you see a hitter in an 0 for 20 slump, just know that that person is feeling that more than you watching. That person is feeling that stress, that strain, embarrassment, and whatever emotion is associated with it. In that moment, they're frustrated, they're confused, they're all these things. But the good ones, like, we don't sit back and go, man, I suck. This, like, I got to change everything. It goes, well, wasn't me today. See you guys tomorrow. That's how it works.
I love the kind of reset the day mindset. I hope everyone can put that into practice. Just reset the day. Try to get a good night's sleep. Try to take care of your body. Try to do all these things systematically. And you're going to have bad days just like everybody else. You're going to spill something on your nice pair of pants. Whatever, but
right.
Reset the day is something I like to adhere to. And wow, that is just a really, really interesting perspective, especially the fans watching either on TV or in the stands, and they're booing and they're upset and they paid a lot of money to watch this guy not strike out or not give up that grand slam, what have you. But yeah, I just have always admired baseball players for being basically, you're hung out to dry. I can't think of another sport where every position players are spread out. Everyone's kind of on their own island if they make an error in the playoffs, in the World Series, and you're just standing there.
Yeah, and those cameras got good lenses. They can zoom in really far.
Yeah.
They can, and Twitter's X is relentless too. So, yeah, you name it, I've heard it. You know, at the end of the day, like, I don't care about your fantasy baseball team. I don't really care how much money you lost in a bet. Like, don't gamble. Like, that's just my don't gamble what you're not willing to lose. Like, that's just my perspective of it. But it's just like all these things. I've heard it all. Had death threats. I've had death threats on my family. And you know what my thought is, honestly, for those people is, you know, God help them. I really, like, anybody that feels the urge to reach out to another human being and make a threat on their family, their children, their wives, themselves, whatever it is, you know, I pray for those people because that's talk about fighting some demons. And so I try to take that same, whenever stuff like that happens, don't get me wrong, I report it and make sure that I'm safe. But, you know, I just really pray for those people that they're fighting their own demons and they feel the urge that they need to attack me for giving my best effort at something. But anyway, yeah, it's really hard for me to watch guys experience failure. I cringe with them, but it's also really easy for me to rejoice with the guys that do great. You know, that's the beauty of baseball. You don't know what you're showing up to watch. I showed up one day to watch my team face the Cubs, and I sat in the dugout for 9 innings and watched Jake Arrieta no hit us. And I'm not going to sit there and tell you that I was pumped about it in the moment, but at the end of the day, I've been in the dugout and seen 2 no-hitters. Like, as a baseball player and a huge fan of the game, I clearly was more excited for the one that my team did, the no-hitting. I watched Edinson Volquez no-hit the Diamondbacks. But when I was in the dugout watching Jake Arrieta, like, we are really rooting for our hit, right? No one wants to be on ESPN that night for the no-hitter. But at the end of the day, years down the road, like, you get a chance to, like, man, you know what? I got to be in the dugout and watch 2 no-hitters from 120 feet away. Like, that's pretty sweet. And so, you know, down the road, it's, you know, really easy to sit there and be super pumped for Jake and super easy for me to be pumped for Volquez after being on the team that did the no-hitting. But it's just part of the game, right? You know, some of my buddies, my college roommate, his parents every year throw a dart at the calendar and put themselves a San Francisco Giants game the day that single season games go on sale. And they splurge. They sit right on top of the dugouts. They get great seats. And years ago, they threw that dart, and it landed on Barry Bonds' record-breaking home run.
Wow.
And they didn't know that when they threw the dart. You know what I mean? They didn't know that when they picked the game. They just, let's go down this weekend. They booked hotels and everything, and they saved a lot. Because if they would have tried to go, they'd do that the week before, right? And, you know, there's another one, too. You know, you just don't know what you're going to get when you go to the ballpark. There's I forget the names of the pitchers, but I think it was Maddux and Randy Johnson were supposed to start this game in L.A. And all these fans were heading to the ballpark, well, getting ready to watch this big matchup. the two teams were fighting for the playoffs. There's a team somewhere else that if they lost, that both the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers got into the playoffs. And so all these fans are heading in watching this game that they're just so excited for. And about 2 hours, I think, before first pitch, the team that was supposed to, that if they lost, both teams got in the playoffs, lost. So both teams scratched their starting pitchers. Let's save them for next week for the playoffs. Give them a quick break, like give them a little breather. And so all these fans showed up to this ballpark to watch Randy Johnson and Greg Maddux. And they had to watch Max Scherzer and Clayton Kershaw. And the fans were pissed. Like, it's funny to go back and like, look at this. It's funny to go back and look at this because they were, I think, I want to say it was Clayton's like third or fourth start, and Max had like right around the same, or maybe one of them had a little few more innings than the other. But it was like, you just don't know what you're walking. Now those, like, if Steve would have said that 5 years ago, it's Scherzer or Kershaw, everyone would be like, oh my gosh, marquee matchup, all eyes on it, right? But that's the beauty of baseball is you go to games and, you know, who's that playing? And what if it's the next Mike Trout, you know?
Right.
You got to say you were there for the debut. You don't, it's just, it's so cool. And that's the beauty of this game. It's a game of failure. It's a game of, there's no better way to put it. It is a game of failure at every level. No matter what you do, when you win, you fail, right? There's no such thing as a perfect game. Perfect games could be better. No one's ever gone out there and thrown 100 pitches, 100 strikes, and had 27 strikeouts and everything that comes along with it. Like, it's just an incredible game that if you love it, you love it. And if you don't understand it, you probably don't love it. And it's my passion. It's been my job for a long time. It's been a lot of things. It's blessed my family with experiences. It's blessed us monetarily. It's blessed us just in travel, getting to see the world. You know, I didn't get on an airplane until I was 18 years old. And my son is like the highest level Delta flyer that there is. Like, you know, and he's seven. So like, it's just like, there's just a different world that it's opened my eyes up to. But yeah, there's, and I don't even remember what the question was at this point. We've just been
off
on another rant here, but this game is amazing. It's so deep, so many different levels. You know, it's one of the few things in life that people running it used to play it. It's just kind of the way it works. Like, there's, you know, there's no really crossover. There's no NFL players coaching Major League Baseball players kind of deal. And, you know, some of the guys that are running it never played it, because you don't have to be good at something. Just because you're not good at something doesn't mean you don't know a lot about it. You know, look at some of the English football clubs or some of the NFL football clubs that we call them, right? The some of our American football clubs where, you know, some of the best coaches never played. And that's just part of it. Like, it's just this melting pot of languages and cultures and diverse backgrounds. And we all come together under this common idea of playing this game. 162 of them in 184 days over the course of the most beautiful time of the year. And we call it America's pastime for a reason. And, you know, it's just like, there's so much passion I have and grew up loving this sport and this game. And I hate the business, but I love the sport like constantly and like all the stuff that goes into it. And just super blessed to be able to say that I've been doing it for so long and just want to do it a few more years.
Well, I think there's a lot left in the tank and I'm rooting for you. Dan, do you have a few kind of wild card questions here. Just kind of fun stuff.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's go for it. I got about 10 minutes and I need to call my wife back. She got off work and she's wondering where I'm at. Oh. I got to check in with her, but she knows I'm long-winded, so it's all good.
All right. Did you have a favorite visitors clubhouse across, you know,
man,
AL, NL?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There's so many different reasons. Like the Phillies visiting clubhouse has a cheesesteak eating contest that's just been going forever. The Detroit Tigers have a menu of milkshakes. And if you come up with this like super weird milkshake, it gets named after you. There's just a whole bunch of different jokes or different things. In Atlanta, there's a Powerade cooler that if you open it, a snake jumps out. And like, it's been there forever. I mean, it was the last time you saw a Powerade cooler, but it's been the same snake, the same string, the same sign forever. It came from Turner to the new ballpark. It's incredible. Some of the stuff that is in Major League clubhouses that has just been a part of what it is. I would say probably my favorite is San Diego, though, for something that you might not even ever think of as a fan. And this might be giving away way too much information, but the team hotel is across the street. So there's no bus. There's no hour-long commute like you're going to play in New York. There's whatever. If stretches at 3 and you want to get out of your bed at 2 in the afternoon and walk over, go for it. No one cares. Be at work by 2:30. You're good. So it's got to be San Diego just simply because of the proximity to the hotel. It's like legit a 3-minute walk from your room, down the elevator, across the street, through security, and you're there.
Nice. How about favorite alternate uni? Alternate uniform from any of the teams you played on, some of those Sunday jersey tops, or did you have one where you're like, oh, this is cool? Do guys get excited about that when it's...
Oh, very. Yeah, very excited. When you know about it in enough time, you'll get custom gloves, custom cleats, custom everything. We're talking $500 gloves that you're like, yeah, I'm going to wear it twice this year, but I'm going to look good. And like, you're willing to do that. When I was with the Marlins, we got to wear like the throwback pinstripes. I was this is awesome. This is awesome. The one that I wish I could have gotten to wear was I came up with Oakland, as you mentioned, from 09 to 14. And right before I got to the big leagues, they ditched the black top. I wanted to wear that black uniform so bad. And they got rid of the black hat, and they just went with the yellow, the green, and the gold, or green, gold, white, gray. Yeah, so they still had 5, but they got rid of the black one, which is what the one that everyone wanted to wear. So, yeah, I would say that alternate one we wore there, I didn't get a chance to be a part of the City Connect stuff. Not yet, anyway. I think that Baltimore one is really sick. Again, it's all black. I think that just looks really clean. And then it'd be really hard pressed not to want to wear the Mariner, like teal blue that they have. That seems like a pretty sick uniform too. So they all are cool in their own way. I know the MLB uniforms this year has been kind of a funky thing, but I'd still have to stick with that pinstripe Marlins throwback was probably my favorite one.
Oh yeah. Okay. Couple more. Have you ever played MLB The Show and gotten yourself loosened up? Started yourself, traded for yourself.
I always wondered,
like, guys have to do that.
Yeah. My son actually was getting on me because I only have like 2 games of mine. And he told me I need to go on the internet and buy every game that I was in. That way he can have it forever. And I'm like, you're in, dude. That sounds great. I'm sorry that I didn't do that ahead of time. But him and I started playing MLB The Show about 2 weeks ago. And it's actually a cool tool as a parent we get to play on weekends and video games in our house, and we use it to like learn the rules of baseball. And well, dad, why? So I have a runner on first base, and I'm like, hey bud, so if I hit the ball to anybody on the infield and it hits the ground first, you throw it to second base and then first base. And what's that called? And he's like, that's a double play. And then I hit the ground ball and he throws it to first. And he's like, I'm sorry, I panicked. I'm like, it's okay, bud. I'm like, you're good. So I've played with myself on there many times, boost my stats, obviously, because there's no way they always underestimate my stuff. And then now it's just really fun to use it as a teaching tool and some fun video game time for me and my kid.
Oh, yeah. You will learn a lot about baseball.
Yeah.
A child or an adult playing MLB The Show. I don't get to play it as much anymore, but my favorite, I don't play video games, but yeah.
It's getting hard. They're making it more realistic. It's not the old A-Rod version of 03 that it used to be. I think it was called Triple Play, actually. It was a different game than completely, but anyway.
Okay, I guess last question. You and your son, when you guys get to carve out a little bit of time together and he wants to do something that maybe you're not crazy about, but it's his thing.
Yeah.
What does a day look like when you guys are just cutting out for a couple hours?
So we actually have these days, we call it the Jackson Appreciation Day. So Jackson's along for the ride in so much of what we do, whether, we got to run our errands or I got to go to the gym and work out, or I'm giving a pitching lesson and he's just along for the ride. So every now and then we do these Jackson Appreciation Days where we just don't say no. He gets to plan where we go eat. He gets to plan what we go do. And like, you find out pretty quick, like what he really wants. And what he really wants is to just spend time with us, whether it's like playing Legos, or he likes to dress up a lot. So he'll dress up as Darth Vader and we'll do like lightsaber fights, or he wants to go outside and play catch or go hit or go ride his bike or go swim. And he just like wants us and all of our attention, and which is this completely normal thing as a kid. Right. And so we started doing this just kind of randomly picking a Saturday, and he wants to go eat some chicken and fries and watch you know, an extra episode of Bluey or something. Oh, it's just like the smallest things. But with how time demanding my job is, and my wife's a nurse, and so her job is time demanding as well. So we're busy folks. And so we do definitely try to take time, set aside, and let him know that he's appreciated, that we love him as our son. We couldn't be happier that we get to be the parents to this kid. Loves karate, loves piano, loves baseball, and just really is like just a passionate, caring person. And I am just so, so blessed to be a dad and blessed to be his dad. And it's whenever it's his time to pick stuff, sometimes it's the MLB The Show, sometimes it's Harry Potter, Hogwarts Legacy video game. A lot of times it's let's go play in his toy room, or let's, you know, just have some fun with these things. But it's really whatever he wants, and we let it happen. We let it be a thing. You know, sometimes it costs me a little more money than I expected in certain aspects, but at the end of the day, you know, my father-in-law says money has no home. You can't take it with you when you're gone. So you make it, and we're going to spend it on experiences and let's go. So that's kind of what we're doing with our son a lot of times, where it's, you know, we're that family that goes to Disneyland once a year. You know, we've been so many times lately, and my son was like, "Dad, how come we only get to go once a year?" I said, "Dude, I got to go three times my entire life. Like, right. I think once a year is plenty, buddy." So it's just, yeah, we're trying really hard to make sure that, just to let our son know that he's appreciated, and that that he's just as much a part of this family as me and mom. And really, he completes our family. And it's just been awesome. Being a dad has been probably the hardest, most humbling thing I've ever had to do in my life. And like everything else in this journey, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Man, what a way to close out here. That's just a good piece of advice. If you're a dad yourself, if you're not, maybe you got a nephew, you got a niece. Children, if you care about them, you give them some undivided attention, you do the things that they like to do, it's going to help their confidence. There's just nothing better, I think, for a child than to know that adults care about them, whether that's their mom and dad or their uncle or their grandma, whoever's taking care of them, spending a lot of time with them. Just a great piece to end on there, Dan. I've just thoroughly enjoyed talking to you today. I appreciate you making time. I know you got some balls in the air, and I'm rooting for you, man. I really am. I think good things are going to happen. And like you said, not sure how it's going to materialize, what's going to happen, but you're enjoying it.
Yeah, we should circle back and see what happens down the road.
Absolutely. You're always welcome here on Dan Time. So, yeah, we'll definitely reconnect.
This has been fun.
And folks, any plug you want to put in? I know I talk about the Journeyman podcast. Folks, please download and subscribe. You will not regret it. Anything else that you'd like to put out there, Dan?
I'm good. No, I'm good. I appreciate it. Thanks for letting people know about the Journeyman podcast. You know, that's just, like you said, there's four of us. We got quite a diverse group of us four in terms of the knowledge of baseball and what we do in real life and everything else. But it's been a lot of fun telling the story of baseball from all the different angles. And it's, you know, it's not really just about baseball. It's just about people. So it's been a lot of fun.
Dan, take care, man. We'll keep in touch, and we'll do this again sometime.
You too, Dan. Take care.
All right, folks. We'll see you next Sunday on the Dan Time Podcast.